नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम्, देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्। सतो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते रुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः।
This is first canto, chapter 9, text number 41.
मुनिगण नृपवर्य संकुलेन्तः सदसि युधिष्ठिर राजसूय एषा अर्हणमुपपेद ईक्षणीयो मम दृशिगोचर एष आविरात्मा।
वर्ड बाय वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। एट द राजसूय यज्ञ सैक्रिफाइस परफॉर्म्ड बाय महाराज युधिष्ठिर देयर वॉज द ग्रेटेस्ट असेंबली ऑफ ऑल द एलाइट मेन ऑफ द वर्ल्ड, द रॉयल एंड लर्नड ऑर्डर्स, एंड इन दैट ग्रेट असेंबली Lord Sri Krishna was worshipped by one and all as the most exalted personality of Godhead. This happened during my presence, and I remembered the incident in order to keep my mind upon the Lord. Purport. After gaining victory in the battle of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhishthir, the emperor of the world, performed the Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. The emperor in those days, upon his ascendance to the throne, would send a challenge horse all over the world to declare his supremacy, and any ruling prince or king was at liberty to accept the challenge and express his tacit willingness either to obey or to disobey the supremacy of the particular emperor. One who accepted the challenge had to fight with the emperor and establish his own supremacy by victory. The defeated challenger would have to sacrifice his life, marking a place for another king or ruler. So Maharaj Yudhishthir also dispatched such challenging horses all over the world. And every ruling prince and king all over the world accepted Maharaj Yudhishthir's leadership as the emperor of the world. After this, all rulers of the world under the regime of Maharaj Yudhishthir were invited to participate in the great sacrificial ceremony of Rajasuya. Such performances required hundreds of millions of dollars, and it was not an easy job for a petty king. Such a sacrificial ceremony being too expensive and also difficult to perform under present circumstances is now impossible in this age of Kali. Nor can anyone secure the required expert priesthood to take charge of the ceremony. So after being invited, all the kings and great learned sages of the world assembled in the capital of Maharaj Yudhishthir. The learned society, including the great philosophers, religionists, physicians, scientists and all great sages was invited. That is to say, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas were the topmost leading men in society, and they were all invited to participate in the assembly. The Vaishyas and Shudras were unimportant elements in society, and they are not mentioned herein. Due to the change of social activities in the modern age, the importance of men has also changed in terms of occupational positions. So there is one more big paragraph which the devotee tomorrow can cover.
Ram, Hare Hare.
We are reading from the chapter Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. And in this particular verse, Bhishma Pitamaha is remembering the Rajasuya assembly in which Lord Krishna was glorified publicly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Maharaj Yudhishthir. In the times of Rajasuya Yajna, even in Mahabharata we find that there were people who were aware of Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there were others who were not aware. So that is why the last para of this purport I have left it for tomorrow, because that's a very important point to be discussed elaborately. So we have taken the other part, the first part of the purport, where Prabhupada is highlighting this point. In the great assembly, only two classes of people are mentioned here. And the Brahmanas, the royal and the learned orders. So Prabhupada is highlighting that point, royal and the learned orders. Mentioning here in the purport that they are the vital elements in society, important part of society, and the other two parts are not so important. As Prabhupada said here. As it is said, Balam Vidyancha Vipranam. Rajnyam Sainyam and Balam Tatha. Balam Vittam Cha Vaishyanam Shudranam Cha Kanishtika. This verse says, Balam Vidyam Cha Vipranam, which means, the strength of the Brahmanas was their wisdom. And Rajnyam means the Kshatriyas. Rajnyam Sainyam Balam Tatha. Their strength was the prowess, physical prowess that they had through the army, and the army and the soldiers and elephants, horses, everything. Why these two orders are considered important in a society? As you know, the social body, the Brahmanas are considered to be the head of the society, and the Vaishyas are and Kshatriyas are compared to the shoulders, Bahubal. So this is highlighted here as the royal and the learned orders, because the Vedic literatures, they focus on what is important for the ultimate welfare of all the people. That is what is highlighted always. In one place, in Bhagavatam, I was reading, a woman, as soon as you say a woman, immediately she is spoken in terms of the embryo or the yoni. In one of the places and sections in Bhagavatam. Because the most important part of a woman is the embryo which produces the child. And the child, in order for the child to be righteous, then there has to be Garbhadhan Sanskar, isn't it? So as soon as you say Stri, is she a Kulastri or not a Kulastri? That is highlighted immediately. As soon as you talk of woman, Kulastriye, Pranashyanti, Kuladharmaha, Sanatana, he says, you know, isn't Ashte Dharme Kulam Krishnam, Adharmabhi Bhavatyutah. Adharmabhi Bhavat Krishna, Pradushyanti, Kulastriyaha. See, the word kulastri is used. Stri is always used along with the word kula. Whether her life is based on chastity and purity, and if it is so, then she will produce valuable progeny for the welfare of the world. In fact, ultimate welfare of the world. Because if she is producing good progeny, then such kings who are born of such families, and they will also bring about the ultimate welfare of all living beings. The community projects, the welfare projects, and to top it all, the spiritual projects. The kings will bring forth those things by which the society can be happy. So just as in the case of a woman, the kula or the purity is anticipated, in the same way, amongst the four classes, the brahmanas and the kshatriyas are highlighted. Because these two classes of people can do the greatest good to society and can also do the greatest harm also, if they are not properly trained. Like, for example, a brahmana. The brahmana's wisdom is so great that he doesn't need even the sena or the army that a kshatriya is possessing. He doesn't need the money that a vaishya is possessing. Like balam vittam cha vaishyanam, it is said. He doesn't need the vitta also. He doesn't need the wealth also. So if you read the section of Prithu Maharaj glorifying the brahmanas, there he is telling so many things about brahmanas. He is saying how all the wealth of this world belongs only to the brahmins, he says. Why? Because the brahmanas don't take any wealth. That's why it belongs to them. Because the brahmanas know that everything belongs to Krishna. And they only take that wealth which is absolutely necessary for their sustenance. Only that much they take. And they are always satisfied. Their mind and senses are always controlled. They are never selfish. They are never greedy. Even if they are given the post of a king, they will not accept. And they are never a slave of the slave to their senses. They never become a slave of money. They never become slave to the worldly worldly talents. For example, they will not become a slave in order to earn something that is worldly. That is the nature of a brahmana also. So such are the wise brahmanas. There is a story of a great army chief officer, one Shaktar, who was going in the forest. So one day, when he was going through the forest in his chariot, he found there was a dark and thin, skinny black man, who was actually a brahmana, who was doing something with some kusha grasses. So this man stopped the chariot there. And he asked this man, "What are you doing, O dark brahman, with this kusha grass?" So the kusha grasses were very sharp and overgrowth was there. So he was actually twisting them and pouring some fluid, some liquid on them. So the brahmana replied, "I am not an austere brahman who is doing some puja with the kusha grass." He said, "I am actually pouring curd in their roots in order to totally uproot them, never to grow." So this Shaktar was very surprised. He asked him, "Why are you doing this? What is the need of doing this? And you seem to be taking a lot of trouble and labor in doing this." So the brahman said, "Yes, of course, it involves labor, it involves trouble. But I am uprooting it completely. Why? Because I completed the education of my students and I was returning home to get married. On the way I found this sharp kusha grasses so much grown here. And I want to see that all this is completely removed because it is causing pain because of the prick in the legs. So this Shaktara was very surprised. He said, what a foolish thing it is. He said, if it is causing you pain, you might as well wear shoes. You don't have to, this Kushagras is causing pain in your leg, but at the same time you are taking so much labor to eradicate it. He said, why don't you wear shoes? You can avoid it. But the Brahmana said, don't think I am uprooting it only for my sake. What about the poor people who will be passing through this forest? Who will not be able to have shoes to wear in their legs? So it's for the welfare of all I am doing this, he said. So then Shaktara was very amazed at his talent. So he heard this. So this Brahmana was telling him that such kind of things that cause public disruption or trouble for the public should be rooted out completely, he said. When Shaktara heard it, immediately it struck his mind that the enemy should be completely uprooted with no trace of any existence. So Shaktara also had an enemy whom he was thinking about, and he had a revengeful attitude in his mind. So he learned this one lesson from him. And also he understood that one should not have someone as an enemy simply to avenge the enemy for one's own sake. But if somebody is an enemy for the welfare of the people, then that enemy should be rooted out. Not only for one's own sake, but for the welfare of all the people. So he learned this lesson. Then Shaktara asked him, please tell me your identity, who are you? Then that Brahmana said, I am the Vishnugupta Chanakya. He said, I am returning from Takshashila after teaching my students. So immediately Shaktara saluted him and respected him. And Chanakya also, in response, saluted him. Then Shaktara asked him, how are you saluting me? You are a Brahmana. But then he said, now that I know your identity, you said you are Shaktara. He was a very famous Magadha king before. Now he was no more a king, he was actually an army officer. He was heading the army. Chanakya was telling him, those who are wise, they will be very happy to offer respects to those who are wiser. So because I know that you are a very wise king, I have heard a lot about you, so I also offer respects to you, he said. So in this way, they were conversing. In the meantime, one of the assistants and servants of the Shaktara, he came there. And then he reminded Shaktara that we were actually, our king is going to offer charity to all the Brahmanas tomorrow. Great officer, would you like to invite this Brahmana for that? He said. So, taking this opportunity, Shaktara was telling, you are so wise, O Chanakya, why didn't you come to our palace and you can become an official priest? And of course, Chanakya said, no, I don't like to serve anyone. I don't like to be a slave of anyone. He said, nor do I need your wealth and position in your court. But then Shaktara told him, you will be completely free. You will not be bound by anyone or anything. You are a Brahmana. Who can bind you? But he said, but you will be a great asset to the people, and you can bring about great welfare and benefit for the people. Please come. So Chanakya considered going with him. Then he was brought to the court. And there were many other Brahmanas also sitting there in the court. So Brahmana was also, Chanakya was also made to sit there. And who was the king? That was King Nandapal. He was the king. So the Brahmana priest brought Nandapal king to give charity to the Brahmins. And when he came, the first Brahmana he saw was this thin, majestic, but at the same time very thin and blackish Brahmana, Chanakya. When he saw King Nandapal, didn't know the talent of Chanakya or the wisdom of Chanakya. He saw him by his superficial outlook. And as soon as he looked at him, he said, Who is this man? Who is this ugly looking man? And somebody has brought him here, thinking he's a Brahmana. What kind of Brahmana is he? I don't even want to look at his face. Remove him from here. Throw him out of the palace, he said. So when Chanakya heard it, he was furious. He said, a Brahmana is considered the child of Brahma. And a guest is considered as good as the image of God. And here, one who has come to your court as a guest, a Brahmana has come as guest. So naturally, both the things go together. And one is supposed to be received warmly. And is this the way you are treating your guest? This goes to show your lack of wisdom. So Chanakya said then. Even after hearing that, King Nandapal didn't come to his senses. Rather, he continued humiliating him. He said, stop speaking all this bombastic words, you chandala, he said. I don't want to hear any more words from you. He said, anyone who speaks against the king, the only punishment offered to him is death sentence. But I am sparing your life. Get out of here, he said. And Chanakya said, see, it is because of your position and the wealth that you have, you are not behaving like a great man, you are behaving as a proud man. And for this pride, you will be destroyed. And he said, because you have humiliated the Brahman class. So Chanakya was not so much worried about the personal insult, but he was observing that this king was a Kshatriya king, was supposed to follow the code of conduct, how Kshatriyas are supposed to follow with respect to Brahmins. He didn't follow, he wanted to curse him for that wrong behavior. Immediately he braided the shikha he had, he loosened his shikha and he took a vow. He said, until I avenge myself with you and until I defeat you from your position, you cannot be king anymore. Until that point of time, I will not tie my shikha, he said. And taking this vow, Chanakya left the palace and he was about to go. So when this king Nandapal saw, he also had become very angry. But then he immediately remembered, by seeing this angry Brahman, he remembered Parashuram. You know, Parashuram had killed several generations of Kshatriyas. And Parashuram was very famous for losing his temper with the Kshatriyas and carrying an axe on his shoulders, always looking very furious. And he became like death personified for all the Kshatriyas of his times. So Parashuram wouldn't spare any Kshatriya anywhere. So immediately King Nandapal remembered Parashuram, and here he thought Chanakya is very similar to him, and he has gone with an angry mood, he is going. Maybe he will be able to take revenge, because the Brahmanas were not ordinary. Either they will fulfill their vow or they will completely destroy themselves. There is nothing in between. So he feared. So he thought in his mind, should I seek forgiveness from him? But that was too much for him. He said, no asking for any forgiveness. After all, he has come to my place and he has spoken in a humiliating manner like this to me. Why should I ask forgiveness? He thought like that in his mind. Instead, he thought, okay, if I cannot ask forgiveness and if he is going to take action, it is better that I finish him off. Then immediately he shouted to his soldiers, arrest him, arrest him. Such a traitor who speaks ill of me, arrest him, he said. So when the queen heard it, she immediately stopped the king. She said, no, my dear king, this is not befitting you. The Brahman class of people are supposed to be treated like children. They have to be greatly respected and honored. If you don't honor him, at least don't arrest him. By arresting him, you become a criminal. If you say he is a traitor, then you become a criminal. So better you don't become a criminal. Queen very boldly advised the king. And the king realized his folly. And he said, okay, leave the Brahman to go. And then Chanakya proceeded from there. Of course, then later comes how when Chanakya proceeded, he met the boy Chandragupta. Chandragupta's father, he was also in Magad, earlier he was also in Magad army, but he was humiliated. Because sometimes the kings who are not very righteous kings, they would sometimes make fun of people or humiliate the people. So because he was humiliated, he left the army and he returned back home. So Chandragupta had a thought also to avenge himself because his father was insulted. So he was keeping this in mind. So King Nandapal had insulted many people. Now Shaktar was the earlier king. He was subdued by him and kept under his custody. But Shaktar also wanted to take revenge. He had also got this in his mind. So Chanakya chose this Chandragupta and told Chandragupta that I'll make you the next king. And Chandragupta wondered, how can this simple Brahmin make me a king? So Chanakya took him and put him in the Greek army and told him that learn all the different kinds of tactics and strategies. And after Chandragupta became well trained, at one point of time, Chanakya taught him special methods by which he can revolt, create a revolt amongst the Greeks, so that there can be an internal fight. So this is called as dividing and ruling, we say, no? So Chanakya taught him. So Chandragupta actually created that. Later on, Chanakya removed him from there and put him in King Nanda's army. So when Chandragupta joined Nanda's army, already Chandragupta had learnt everything. At one point of time, Chanakya again created that kind of fight, internal fight, by which more than half of Nanda's army turned against Nanda. And they all started siding with Chandragupta. And Chandragupta could very easily defeat Nanda and dethrone him. And he was later posted as Chandragupta Maurya, was posted as the king later. At that time, this Nandapal realized how powerful is this simple Brahmin, although he is skinny and dark and looks insignificant. So the prowess of the Brahmins was very great. There are so many instances to show. Just like we find a tussle between a Kshatriya and a Brahmana in another occasion also. Like when King Kaushika, who later on becomes Vishwamitra. So when he goes to the ashrama of Vasishtha while passing through the forest, he hears the resounding Vedic mantras there, and he also sees there are thick green forests and there are waterfalls, and it's a natural scenic place. There are only hermitages there. There are no big buildings there. So this Kaushika became very inspired by the beauty of that place, and then he wanted to visit the great Vasishtha Brahman. So he went to his ashrama, and Vasishtha wanted to offer him some feast. Although Kaushika repeatedly said, no, I don't want anything now, I just came to visit you. I had heard your glories. Of course, Vasishtha was not permanently living in that place. He was visiting from one place to another, different places, but he had arrived there and he was staying there for some time. So he insisted that you should eat. Then the king agreed. And then Vasishtha brought a big plateful of delicious food preparations and everything. He was amazed. And then he asked, where did you get all this from? And he said, I got from this sabala, this cow. This is a heavenly cow offered to me for my performance of sacrifices. I need milk, I need ghee for that. Then the King Kaushika became envious. He said, the king should possess the best of the things in the world. So because the sabala is able to offer such nice gifts, I would like to take this cow with me. And the Vasishtha said, no, my dear king, this is the property of the Brahmanas. And all of us here, we perform the yajna based on the wealth offered by this cow. So you cannot take her, I cannot give. So then King Kaushika said, if you don't give, I will take her by force. Then he was trying to take her by force, and Vasishtha did not take any action. And Sabala started crying. She said, oh great Brahmana, how can you spare me like this? How can you allow me to be dragged by a king and taken away like this? And Vasishtha said, I am a Brahmana. A Brahmana cannot fight. How can I take action as a king? I have to follow my dharma. Then Sabala told him, no, you only allow me, order me, that you order me to be here, that I should not go away. Then I will do the rest of the things, she said. And then Vasishtha said, oh, my dear Sabala, don't go away, be here, stay here. And that's all. By that one word of the Brahmana, she got the power by which from her eyes, from her mouth, from different parts of her body, she created so many soldiers, hundreds and thousands of soldiers who came out, who destroyed all the army of King Kaushika, Vishwamitra. And he was amazed at the power of the cow. So, later on, Vishwamitra understood that the power of the asceticism of the Brahmanas is far superior than the physical prowess of the Kshatriyas. So better I become a Brahmana, I become a Brahma Rishi, like Vasishtha. Keeping this in mind, he went to the forest to perform severe penance for Lord Shiva. And he performed and got very powerful, deadly celestial weapons. And then Vishwamitra returned furiously. And from distance he started whirling all the weapons and the ashram. And all the hermitages started burning. They were set ablaze. And all the brahmanas were coming out. He was even sending the weapons towards brahmanas to kill them. So when Vasishtha came out, saw the havoc that Vishwamitra was creating, he just took his rod. You know, the brahmanas have a brahmana rod, you know, in which they keep their hand. He just took that rod in hand. And Vasishtha was practically deflecting all the weapons which were coming towards him with that Brahman rod. Can you imagine? And the Brahman rod was swallowing all the weapons. All the weapons went right into it. And then, at one point of time, Vishwamitra created a Brahmastra. Sent a Brahmastra, very powerful. And Vasishtha took a furious, huge form he took, which was practically like fire personified. He took that form. And he took that whole Astra on his body. He took it. In fact, even the demigods were showering flowers. They were amazed seeing this prowess of Vasishtha. He took it all on him. And then Vasishtha prayed to the Lord. Actually, I had no desire to do such things like this. Because I wanted to protect the other brahmanas, I did this. He says. So Vishwamitra was defeated. Of course, Vishwamitra goes back. He becomes Rajarishi, then he becomes Maharishi, then he becomes Brahmarishi gradually. But the point we are highlighting here is the brahmanas were very powerful in their asceticism. Brahmanas were extremely powerful. And the brahmanas are simply personification of, they are like walking, talking scripture. In fact, they live only for the welfare of others. They have no purpose for their own living. Like for example, the brahmanas had posted King Vena as the king. You all know that, isn't it? He was posted as a king. But when Vena became atrocious, he did not allow the brahmanas to perform yajna. He did not allow the people to worship God. He was an atheist. He was demanding everyone that everyone worship me as the supreme personality of Godhead. And then the brahmanas, simply by their hunkar, they destroyed him. They said, that's all. It was finished by that hunkar. That was the prowess of the brahmins. So the brahmanas were the ones who would put someone on the throne, and they were the ones who would remove someone from the throne. But they themselves would not want to sit on the throne, because they were only advisors, and they wanted to remain advisors. And they were only disseminating knowledge for the welfare of the public. For example, giving knowledge to public free of cost. Like you see, giving the Vaidya, the one who gives justice, one who gives knowledge, they are all actually brahmanas. They had the wisdom. But for physical welfare, mental welfare, spiritual welfare, that is all given by the brahmins. So, without the brahmanas, the society is considered to be headless society. It's like as good a society without head. And the kshatriyas were also important. Why? The brahmanas were advisors and kshatriyas were executors. So both were very vital in society. The kshatriyas had a tremendous physical prowess. But the kshatriyas also were very learned like brahmanas. They were rajarishis. But they were not allowed to preach because of passion. Because kshatriyas are in passion. And they are not allowed to preach the Shastras, but I mean teach the Shastras like the Brahmanas teach in Gurukula. But Kshatriyas knew what is wisdom and they lived by it also. And they simply were followers of Brahmanas. That's like Chandragupta Maurya is a follower of Chanakya. Like that. So, here it is mentioned that the other two classes are not very important. Why? Because Balam Bittam Chavaishana and Shudrananta Kanishtika, which means the Vaishyas are simply absorbed in the thoughts of money and the worldly enjoyments. The Vaishyas and Shudras have got many weaknesses explained in the scripture. That's why it says, Striya Vaishyas Tata Shudras, Tepyanti Paramgatim. Krishna uses that Shudra and Vaishya, he says there. Why? Because the Vaishyas are addicted to wealth, money. You have a practical example in Bhagavatam is explained in the 10th canto when Nanda Maharaj, when Gargarishi comes to his home, he is putting himself in the role of ordinary Vaishya who is always absorbed in Gramya Buddhi. Gramya Buddhi means worldly mentality. He is saying, Dina Chetasam, he is saying. What is this? What is that verse? Anybody knows? He uses the word Dina Chetasam. We are low-minded Vaishyas, he is saying. Because we are always floating in money. When there is money, then there is also sense gratification that comes along with money. So, somebody who is counting money, his mind is always fixed in money only. He cannot think of higher things like the Brahmanas, to think of the ultimate welfare of liberation from this world. And when one is floating money, one doesn't want to get liberated. One is attached to wealth, like that. And the Shudras are famous for lamentation. They always worry. That is one of the natures of a Shudra. And they always have blind faith in glittering illusion. That is also a symptom of a Shudra. Just like Prabhupada is saying, the scientists are putting forth theories like evolution theory and things came by chance, everything came from Big Bang, and all the people of Kali Yuga are nodding their head, which means they are Shudras. They cannot think. Because Shudra can never think. Shudra simply will accept whatever is spoken blindly. Whereas Brahmana can think, Brahmana can challenge. Brahmana will not accept anything unless it is logically explained. So Prabhupada says that. So, the Shudra class of people have a tendency to become addicted to the worldly enjoyment, namely wine, women, and wealth. So that is the tendency of Shudras also. So the Shudras and Vaishyas are sustained by the purity of the Brahmanas and the prowess of the Kshatriyas. That is why in very big functions and everything, the top classes are only highlighted because of that reason, as Prabhupada explains here. Of course, that is not to say that the Vaishyas and Shudras have no role to play in society. They have their role to play also. Trading, farming, cow protection, and the Shudras also are supposed to faithfully serve the top three classes. But here Prabhupada is saying, in the modern age, the importance of men has also changed in terms of occupational positions, he says. Which means in the modern society, the only important elements that are considered important in society are the Vaishyas and Shudras only. How? The Vaishyas are the economic lords who are opening big industries everywhere. And the Shudras are the labor class people who are working in those machines, big machines. And where are the Brahmanas? And they are not given any role in society at all. There is no Brahminical education or paravidya taught. The education taught in the modern times is also avidya. Why? Because although man is educated in the material science is like that knowledge which makes one go very high, like an eagle which is going, flying in the sky, but he can only see a dead corpse. It can't see anything good. It only focuses its eyes on a dead corpse. Similarly, the material education makes one have an eagle-like sight only. It does not help one to become enlightened. in modern times. So the economic lords are the money, people with money in their pockets. They are the ones who are ruling the country. They are the ones who are making the policies. They are the ones who are, like for example, I heard ahead of Hinjawadi, practically thousands of acres are bought by Lloyd company, and many other companies have purchased, I heard. Some companies have purchased 500 acres, 200 acres, 300 acres like that ahead of Pune. So they are saying that Pune and Bombay will merge over a period of time. There will be no place in between. So they say when Pune and Bombay merge, that will be the time when Pune will become like Bombay. They are saying. So now already companies have bought, actually, even I heard Infosys company has, Infosys and even the one more company, they purchased probably hundreds of acres ahead, I heard, ahead of Hinjawadi. So you'll find, because the Vaishyas have the money in their pockets, so using that money as the might or the power, they're controlling everyone and everything. Like the scientists, for example, are supposed to be Brahmanas, but they have become play toys in the hands of Vaishyas now. Because Vaishyas sponsor a project, and the scientists are saluting them and working for them, working hard for them. And then the Vaishyas say, prepare a bomb to throw on Pakistan. And the scientists are ready to prepare for them. Yeah, you'll see that. So, the so-called Brahmana scientists, they have become Katputali, they have become play toy in the hands of Vaishyas only. And the Shudras are the labor class people who are raising flag and propagating and promoting communism. See, when Shudras come to power, there is communism. When the Vaishyas come to power, there is capitalism. When Kshatriyas come to power, there is dictatorship. All three are condemned. When Brahmanas come to power, there is monarchy. Monarchy means when the Brahmanas come to power, means not that they will themselves assume power, but the Brahmanas will be forming a board with which they will post a Kshatriya as a king. Then the Brahmanas are in power. Then that is monarchy. Yudhishthir Maharaj ruling the world. Parikshit Maharaj ruling the world. Like that. Such great righteous Rajarishi kings ruling the world. That is monarchy. Like you see Swayambhu Manu. He's one of the Manu's kings. And then he is posting Uttanapad, very righteous king. Then there is Dhruva Maharaj, all first class kings. And Dhruva Maharaj retires, then again Priyavrat comes afterwards. So, you can see the kings never wanted to enjoy the position at all. Priyavrat is in forest and he is made to become the king, although he doesn't want to be the king. People who never wanted to enjoy the world, they are made the king. Who simply wanted to be servants of the praja. They are made the king of the world. That is monarchy. So that's how in Kali Yuga, because undue importance is given to the Vaishyas and Shudras, because of which the society is suffering now. Because there is no brain in the society, and the power, the Kshatriya power, which is supposed to be used for protection, is being used for exploitation. In the age of Kali Yuga, very unfortunately. So, the Vedic times, these things were very grand, like Rajasu Yajna is being celebrated. If you see, the Brahmanas would come from northern door, Kshatriyas would come from southern door, there would be different big gates in the palace. They would come to the royal assembly every morning. And just there was justice, there was order, there was law, everything was perfect. The Shastras were the same penal codes for the kings. And the Rajasu Yajna was connected in a very, very big way, very grand way. I was recently hearing that so many millions of people attended the Rajasu Yajna that they had huge halls, you know. In one hall they would put 50,000 people to take prasad. And once the hall is full with 50,000 people, they would blow a conch shell. Whoop! They would blow. That means, you know, nobody should enter the hall anymore. The hall is full now. Then one is supposed to go to the next hall. So in this way it is said in Rajasu Yajna of Yudhishthira Maharaj there were innumerable conch shell blows, which means there were innumerable halls where the prasadam was being served. And it is said Yudhishthira Maharaj was performed the abhishek with several conch shells also. Duryodhana almost fainted seeing the prosperity in the Rajasu Yajna. And most important aspect of Rajasu Yajna is the Lord Krishna being glorified by all the kings, including Yudhishthira and all the Kuru elders. And Krishna worshipped, he was given the Agra Puja. So that is the highlight of Rajasuya Yajna. In fact, Maharaj Yudhishthira wanted to perform Rajasuya Yajna not for increasing his own name and fame, but for glorifying Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now Bhishma is remembering that I was also there in the Rajasuya Yajna. I was watching how Krishna was glorified, how he was honored and respected in that public assembly. So it is very pleasing to his heart, because the public many times is unable to recognize the supremacy of the Lord owing to their ignorance. But Rajasuya Yajna was an occasion which gave an opportunity to glorify Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So remembering that, Bhishma is very much pleased, remembering that vision of the Rajasuya Yajna where Krishna was glorified in that wonderful way. So the next paragraph, another devotee will cover tomorrow more elaborately. Granthrachimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada.